Chapter 11, How Not to Die from Breast Cancer. You have breast cancer. These are among the most feared words a woman can hear, and for good reason. Besides skin cancer, breast cancer is the most common cancer among American women. Every year, about 230,000 are diagnosed with breast cancer and 40,000 die from it. Breast cancer does not occur overnight. The lump you feel in the shower one morning may have started forming decades ago. By the time doctors detect the tumor, it may have already been present for 40 years or even longer. The cancer has been growing, maturing, and acquiring hundreds of new survival-of-the-fittest mutations that allow it to grow even more quickly as it tries to outmaneuver your immune system. The scary reality is that what doctors call early detection is actually late detection. Modern imaging simply isn't good enough to detect cancer at its earliest stages, so it can spread long before it's even spotted. A woman is considered healthy until she shows signs or symptoms of breast cancer, but if she's been harboring a malignancy for 2 decades, can she truly be considered healthy? People who do the right thing by improving their diets in hopes of preventing cancer may in fact be successfully treating it as well. Autopsy studies have shown that as many as 20% of women aged 20 to 54 who died from unrelated causes, such as car accidents, had so-called occult or hidden breast cancers growing inside them. Sometimes there's nothing you can do to prevent the initiation stage of cancer, when that first normal breast cell mutates into a cancerous one. Some breast cancers may even start in the womb and be related to your mother's diet. For this reason, we all need to choose a diet and lifestyle that not only prevents the initiation stage of cancer, but also hampers the promotion stage, during which the cancer grows to a size large enough to pose a threat. The good news is that no matter what your mom ate or how you lived as a child, by eating and living healthfully, you may be able to slow the growth rate of any hidden cancers. In short, you can die with your tumors rather than from them. This is how dietary cancer prevention and treatment can end up being the same thing. One or two cancer cells never hurt anyone, but how about a billion cancer cells? That's how many may be in a tumor by the time it's picked up by a mammogram. Like most tumors, breast cancer starts with just one cell, which divides to become 2, 4, and then 8. Every time breast cancer cells divide, the tumor can effectively double in size. Let's see how many times a tiny tumor has to double to get to a billion cells. Take out a calculator. Multiply 1 times 2. Then multiply that number times 2. Keep doing that until you reach a billion. Don't worry, it won't take long. It's only 30 doublings. In just 30 doublings, a single cancer cell can turn into a billion. The key to how quickly you'd be diagnosed with cancer then is the doubling time. How long does it take tumors to double once? Breast cancers can double in size in anywhere from as few as 25 days to 1,000 days or more. In other words, it could be 2 years, or it could be more than 100 years before a tumor starts to cause problems. Where you fall on that time scale, 2 years or a century, may depend in part on what you eat. When I was a teen, I ate a lousy diet. One of my favorite meals was, no joke, chicken fried steak. During my youth, I may have caused one of the cells in my colon or prostate to mutate. But I've been eating much healthier for the last 25 years. My hope is that even if I did initiate a cancerous growth, if I don't promote it, I may be able to slow down its growth. I don't care if I get diagnosed with cancer 100 years from now. I don't expect to be around at that point to worry about it. Current controversy over the cost and effectiveness of mammograms misses an important point. Breast cancer screening, by definition, does not prevent breast cancer. It can just pick up existing breast cancer. Based on autopsy studies, as many as 39% of women in their 40s already have breast cancers growing within their bodies that may be simply too small to be detected by mammograms. That's why you can't just wait until diagnosis to start eating and living healthier. You should start tonight. Risk Factors for Breast Cancer. The American Institute for Cancer Research is considered one of the world's leading authorities on diet and cancer. Based on the best available research, it came up with 10 recommendations for cancer prevention. Beyond never chewing tobacco, their bottom line dietary message was, quote, "Diets that revolve around whole plant foods, vegetables, whole grains, fruits, and beans, cut the risk of many cancers and other diseases as well," unquote. To demonstrate how dramatically lifestyle choices can impact breast cancer risk, over the course of about 7 years, researchers followed a group of about 30,000 postmenopausal women with no history of breast cancer. Achieving just 3 of the 10 recommendations from the American Institute for Cancer Research, limiting alcohol, eating mostly plant foods, and maintaining a normal body weight, was associated with a 62% lower risk of breast cancer. Yes, 3 simple health behaviors appeared to cut the risk by more than half. Remarkably, eating a plant-based diet along with walking every day can improve our cancer defenses within just 2 weeks. Researchers dripped the blood of women before and after 14 days of healthy living onto breast cancer cells growing in petri dishes. The blood taken after they started eating healthier suppressed cancer growth significantly better and killed 20-30% more cancer cells than the blood taken from the very same women just 2 weeks before. The researchers attributed this effect to a decrease in levels of a cancer-promoting growth hormone called IGF-1, likely due to the reduced intake of animal protein. This raises the question, what kind of blood do you want in your body? What kind of immune system? The kind of blood that just rolls over when new cancer cells pop up? Or blood that circulates to every nook and cranny in your body with the power to slow down and stop cancer cells in their tracks? Alcohol. In 2010, the official World Health Organization body that assesses cancer risks formally upgraded its classification of alcohol to a definitive human breast carcinogen. In 2014, it clarified its position by stating that, regarding breast cancer, no amount of alcohol is safe. But what about drinking responsibly? In 2013, scientists published a compilation of more than 100 studies on breast cancer and light drinking, up to 1 alcoholic beverage a day. The researchers had found a small but statistically significant increase in breast cancer risk even among women who had at most 1 drink per day, except perhaps red wine. I'll talk about that in a second. They estimated that every year around the world, nearly 5,000 breast cancer deaths may be attributable to this light drinking. The carcinogen isn't the alcohol itself. The culprit is actually the toxic breakdown product of alcohol called acetaldehyde, which can form in your mouth almost immediately after you take a sip. Experiments show that even holding a single teaspoon of hard liquor in your mouth for 5 seconds before spitting it out results in the production of potentially carcinogenic levels of acetaldehyde that lingers for more than 10 minutes. If even a single sip of alcohol might produce cancer-causing levels of acetaldehyde in the mouth, what about using mouthwash that contains alcohol? Researchers who tested the effects of a variety of retail mouthwashes and oral rinses concluded that, although the risk is slight, it's probably best to refrain from using such products if they contain alcohol. A side note, red wine versus white wine. The Harvard Nurses' Health Study found that even less than 1 drink a day may be associated with a small increase in breast cancer risk. Interestingly, drinking only red wine was not associated with breast cancer risk. Why? A compound in red wine appears to suppress the activity of an enzyme called estrogen synthase, which breast tumors can use to create estrogen to fuel their own growth. This compound is found in the skin of the dark purple grapes used to make red wine, which explains why white wine appears to provide no such benefit since it's produced without the skin. The researchers concluded that red wine may ameliorate the elevated breast cancer risk associated with alcohol intake. In other words, the grapes in red wine may help cancel out some of the cancer-causing effects of the alcohol. But you can reap the benefits without the risks associated with imbibing alcoholic beverages by simply drinking grape juice, or even better, eating the purple grapes themselves, preferably ones with seeds, as they appear to be most effective at suppressing estrogen synthase. It's good and delicious to know that strawberries, pomegranates, and plain white mushrooms may also suppress the potentially cancer-promoting enzyme. Melatonin and breast cancer risk. For billions of years, life on planet Earth evolved under conditions of about 12 hours of light and 12 hours of darkness. Humans controlled fire for cooking about 1 million years ago, but we've only been using candles for about 5,000 years and electric lights for a mere century. In other words, our ancient ancestors lived half their lives in the dark. These days, though, because of the electric light pollution at night, the only Milky Way your children may see is inside a candy wrapper. Electric lighting has enabled us to remain productive well into the wee hours, but might this unnatural nighttime light exposure have any adverse health effects? In philosophy, there's a flawed argument called the appeal to nature fallacy, in which someone proposes that something is good merely because it's natural. In biology, however, this may hold some truth. The conditions under which our bodies were finely tuned over millions of years can sometimes give us insight into our optimal functioning. For example, we evolved running around naked in equatorial Africa. Therefore, it's not surprising that many of us modern humans become deficient in vitamin D, the sunshine vitamin, if we live in northern climes or in countries where the culture dictates full-body coverings for women. Could something as ubiquitous as the light bulb be a mixed blessing? Right in the middle of your brain sits the pineal gland, your so-called third eye. It's connected to your actual eyes and has just one function: to produce a hormone called melatonin. During the day, the pineal gland is inactive, but once the sky darkens, it activates and begins pumping melatonin into your bloodstream. You start getting tired, feel less alert, and start thinking about sleep. Melatonin secretion may peak between 2 a.m. and 5 a.m. and then shuts off at daybreak, which is your cue to wake up. The level of melatonin in your bloodstream is one of the ways your internal organs know what time it is. It functions as one hand on your circadian clock. Besides helping to regulate your sleep, melatonin is thought to play another role: suppressing cancer growth. Think of melatonin as helping to put cancer cells to sleep at night. To see if this function applies to preventing breast cancer, researchers from Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston and elsewhere came up with a clever idea of studying blind women. The thought was that because blind women can't see sunlight, their pineal glands never stop secreting melatonin into their bloodstreams. Sure enough, the researchers found that blind women may have just half the odds of breast cancer as sighted women. Conversely, women who interrupt their melatonin production by working night shifts appear to be at increased risk for breast cancer. Even living on a particularly brightly lit street may affect the risk. Studies comparing nighttime satellite photos against breast cancer rates have found that people living in brighter neighborhoods tend to have higher breast cancer risk. Therefore, it's probably best to sleep without any lights on and with the blinds down, though the evidence to support these strategies is limited. Melatonin production can be gauged by measuring the amount of melatonin excreted in our first pee in the morning. And indeed, women with higher melatonin secretion have been found to have lower rates of breast cancer. Other than minimizing nighttime light exposure, is there anything else you can do to keep up your production of melatonin? Apparently so. In 2005, Japanese researchers reported an association between higher vegetable intake and higher melatonin levels in the urine. Is there anything in your diet that may lower melatonin production, thereby potentially increasing breast cancer risk? We didn't know until a comprehensive study of diet and melatonin was published in 2009. Researchers at Harvard University asked nearly 1,000 women about their consumption of 38 different foods or food groups and measured their morning melatonin levels. Meat consumption was the only food significantly associated with lower melatonin production, for reasons that are yet unknown. Minimizing melatonin disruption may therefore mean putting curtains on your windows, eating more vegetables, and lowering the curtain on eating too much meat. A side note, exercise and breast cancer. Physical activity is considered a promising preventive measure against breast cancer, not only because it helps with weight control, but because exercise tends to lower circulating estrogen levels. 5 hours a week of vigorous aerobic exercise can lower estrogen and progesterone exposure by about 20%. But do you need to work out that long for it to be protective? Although even light exercise is associated with lower risk of some other types of cancer, for breast cancer, leisurely strolls don't appear to cut it. Even an hour a day of activity such as slow dancing or light housework may not help. According to the largest study ever published on the subject, only women who worked up a sweat at least 5 or more times a week appeared to get significant protection. Moderately intense activity may offer as much benefit as vigorous exercise, though walking at a moderate pace for an hour a day is considered a moderately intense level of exercise, but it wasn't put to the test until a 2013 study reported that, indeed, walking an hour a day or more is associated with significantly lower breast cancer risk. Darwin was right. It's survival of the fittest, so get fit. Heterocyclic amines. In 1939, a curious finding was published in a paper titled "Presence of Cancer-Producing Substances in Roasted Food." A researcher described how he could induce breast cancers in mice by painting their heads with extracts of roasted horse muscle. These cancer-producing substances have since been identified as heterocyclic amines, described by the National Cancer Institute as, quote, chemicals formed when muscle meat, including beef, pork, fish, and poultry, is cooked using high-temperature methods, unquote. These cooking methods include roasting, pan-frying, grilling, and baking. Eating boiled meat is probably the safest. People who eat meat that never goes above 212 degrees Fahrenheit produces urine and feces that are significantly less DNA damaging compared to those eating meat dry-cooked at higher temperatures. This means they have fewer mutagenic substances flowing through their bloodstreams and coming in contact with their colons. On the other hand, baking chicken for as few as 15 minutes at about 350 degrees Fahrenheit leads to this HCA, this heterocyclic amine production. These carcinogens are formed in a high-temperature chemical reaction between some of the components of muscle tissue. The lack of some of these substances in plants may explain why even fried veggie burgers don't contain measurable HCAs. The longer meat is cooked, the more HCAs form. This process may explain why eating well-done meat is associated with an increased risk of cancers of the breast, colon, esophagus, lung, pancreas, prostate, and stomach. The situation creates what the Harvard Health Letter called a meat preparation paradox. Cooking meat thoroughly reduces the risk of contracting foodborne illnesses, but cooking meat too thoroughly may increase the risk of these foodborne carcinogens. Just because heterocyclic amines cause cancer in rodents doesn't mean they cause cancer in humans. In this case, though, it turns out people may be even more susceptible. The livers of rodents have shown an uncanny ability to detoxify 99% of the HCA scientists stuff down their animals' throats, a technique called gavage. But then, in 2008, researchers discovered that the livers of humans fed cooked chicken were only able to detoxify about half of these carcinogens, suggesting that the cancer risk is far higher than was previously thought based on experiments in rats. The carcinogens found in cooked meat are thought to explain why, as the Long Island Breast Cancer Study Project reported in 2007, women who eat more grilled, barbecued, or smoked meats over their lifetimes may have as much as 47% higher odds of breast cancer. And the Iowa Women's Health Study found that women who ate their bacon, beefsteak, and burgers very well done had nearly 5 times the odds of getting breast cancer compared with women who preferred their meats served rare or medium. To see what was happening inside the breast, researchers asked women undergoing breast reduction surgery about their meat cooking methods. The scientists were able to link the consumption of fried meat with the amount of DNA damage found within the women's breast tissue, the type of damage that can potentially cause a normal cell to mutate into a cancer cell. HCAs appear able to both initiate and promote cancer growth. FIP, P-H-I-P, one of the most abundant HCAs in cooked meat, was found to have potent estrogen-like effects, fueling human breast cancer cell growth almost as powerfully as pure estrogen, on which most human breast tumors thrive. But that result was based on research in a petri dish. How do we know that cooked meat carcinogens find their way into human breast ducts, where most breast cancers arise? We didn't, until researchers measured the levels of FIP in the breast milk of non-smoking women. HCAs are also found in cigarette smoke. In this study, FIP was found in the breast milk of women who ate meat at the same concentration known to significantly boost breast cancer cell growth. No trace of FIP was found in the breast milk of the one vegetarian participant. A similar finding was reported in a study comparing the levels of FIP in people's hair. The chemical was detected in hair samples of all six of the meat eaters tested, but in only one of the six vegetarians. HCAs can also be found in fried eggs. Your body can rapidly rid itself of these toxins once exposure ceases, though. In fact, urine levels of FIP can drop to zero within 24 hours of refraining from eating meat. So if you practice meatless Mondays, the level of FIP passing through your body may become undetectable by Tuesday morning. But diet is not the only source of FIP. HCA levels in vegetarians who smoke may approach those of non-smoking meat eaters. The heterocyclic amine FIP is not just a so-called complete carcinogen, able to both initiate cancers and then promote their growth. FIP may also then facilitate cancer spread. Cancer develops in three major stages: initiation, the irreversible DNA damage that starts the process; number two, promotion, the growth and division of the initiated cell into a tumor; and then, finally, three, progression, which can involve the invasion of the tumor into surrounding tissues and metastasis, or spread, to other areas of the body. Scientists can test how invasive or aggressive a certain cancer is by putting its cells in an instrument called an invasion chamber. They place cancer cells on one side of a porous membrane and then gauge their ability to penetrate and spread through the membrane. When researchers placed metastatic breast cancer cells from a 54-year-old woman in an invasion chamber all by themselves, relatively few were able to breach the barrier. But within 72 hours of adding FIP to the chamber, the cancer cells became more invasive, crawling through the membrane at an accelerated rate. FIP in meat may therefore represent a three-strikes-you're-out type of carcinogen, potentially involved in every stage of breast cancer development. Staying away from the stuff isn't easy, though, eating the standard American diet. As researchers note, quote, "exposure to FIP is difficult to avoid because of its presence in so many commonly consumed cooked meats, particularly chicken, beef, and fish." Cholesterol. Remember earlier when I talked about the American Institute for Cancer Research? A study found that following its guidelines for cancer prevention appeared to reduce not just breast cancer risk, but also heart attack risk. What's more, not only may eating healthier to prevent cancer help to prevent heart disease, but eating to prevent heart disease may also help prevent cancer. One of the reasons? Cholesterol may play a role in the development and progression of breast cancer. Cancer appears to feed on cholesterol. LDL cholesterol stimulates the growth of breast cancer cells in a petri dish. They just gobble up the so-called bad cholesterol. Tumors may suck up so much cholesterol that cancer patients' cholesterol levels tend to plummet as their cancer grows. This is not a good sign, as patient survival tends to be lowest when cholesterol uptake is highest. The cancer is thought to be using cholesterol to make estrogen or to shore up tumor membranes to help the cancer migrate and invade more tissue. In other words, breast tumors may take advantage of high circulating cholesterol levels to fuel and accelerate their own growth. Cancer's hunger for cholesterol is such that pharmaceutical companies have considered using LDL cholesterol as a Trojan horse to deliver anti-tumor drugs to cancer cells. Though data have been mixed, the largest study on cholesterol and cancer to date, including more than a million participants, found a 17% increased risk in women who had total cholesterol levels over 240 compared with women whose cholesterol was under 160. If lowering cholesterol may help lower breast cancer risk, what about taking cholesterol-lowering statin drugs? Statins looked promising in petri dish studies, but population studies comparing breast cancer rates among statin users and non-users showed inconsistent results. Some suggested statins decreased breast cancer risk, while others showed increased risk. Nearly all these studies were relatively short-term, however. Most considered 5 years to be long-term statin use, but breast cancer can take decades to develop. The first major study on the breast cancer risk of statin use for 10 years or longer was published in 2013. It found that women who had been taking statins for a decade or more had twice the risk of both common types of infiltrating breast cancer, invasive ductal carcinoma and invasive lobular carcinoma. The cholesterol drugs doubled the risk. If confirmed, the public health implications of these findings are immense. Approximately 1 in 4 women in the United States over age 45 may be taking these drugs. The number one killer of women is heart disease, not breast cancer, so women still need to bring down their cholesterol. You can likely achieve this without drugs by eating a healthy enough plant-based diet, and certain plant foods may be particularly protective. Preventing and treating breast cancer by eating plants. Not long ago, I received a very moving note from Bettina, a woman who had been following my work on nutritionfacts.org. Bettina had been diagnosed with stage 2 triple-negative breast cancer, the hardest type to treat. She underwent 8 months of treatment, including surgery, chemotherapy, radiation. A breast cancer diagnosis is stressful enough, but the anxiety and depression could be compounded by this kind of rigorous cancer regimen. Bettina, however, used the experience to make positive changes in her life. After watching a number of my videos, she started to eat healthier. She followed many of the recommendations you'll hear about in this chapter for helping to prevent a recurrence of cancer, such as eating more broccoli and flax seeds. The good news, Bettina has been cancer-free for more than 3 years now. Given all the studies I read through, it's easy for me to forget that the statistics refer to people's lives. Stories like Bettina's help me put faces to all the dry facts and figures. When real people make real changes, they can see real results. Sadly, even after a breast cancer diagnosis, most women may not make the dietary changes that could help them the most, such as consuming less meat and more fruits and vegetables. Maybe they don't realize, or their doctors never told them, that a healthier lifestyle may improve their survival chances. For example, a study of nearly 1,500 women found that remarkably simple behavioral changes, such as eating just 5 or more servings of fruits and veggies per day, along with walking for 30 minutes 6 days a week, was associated with a significant survival advantage. Those who followed these recommendations appeared to have nearly half the risk of dying from their cancer in the 2 years following diagnosis. While stories like Bettina's can help make the statistics more inspiring, it all has to come back to the science. Over time, what to eat and feed our families are life or death decisions. How else can we decide but based on the best available balance of evidence? Fiber. Inadequate fiber consumption may also be a risk factor for breast cancer. Researchers at Yale University and elsewhere found that premenopausal women who ate more than 6 grams of soluble fiber a day, the equivalent of about a single cup of black beans, had 62% lower odds of breast cancer compared with women who consumed less than about 4 grams a day. Fiber's benefits appeared even more pronounced for estrogen receptor negative breast tumors, which are harder to treat. Premenopausal women on a higher fiber diet had 85% lower odds of that type of breast cancer. How did the researchers arrive at these figures? The Yale study was what's called a case-control study. Scientists compared the past diets of women who had breast cancer, the cases, to the past diets of similar women who did not have breast cancer, the controls, to try to tease out if there was something distinctive about the eating habits of the women who developed the disease. The researchers reported that certain women with breast cancer reported eating significantly less soluble fiber on average than the cancer-free women, hence soluble fiber may be protective. The women in the study weren't getting their fiber from supplements, though. They were getting it from food. But this could mean that eating more fiber is merely evidence that the cancer-free women are eating more plant foods, the only place fiber is found naturally. Therefore, fiber itself might not be the active ingredient. Maybe there's something else protective in plant foods. On the other hand, noted the researchers, quote, an increased consumption of fiber from foods of plant origin may reflect a reduced consumption of foods from animal origin, unquote. In other words, maybe it's not what they were eating more of, but what they were eating less of. The reason high fiber intake is associated with less breast cancer may be because of more beans or less bologna. Either way, an analysis of a dozen other breast cancer case control studies reported similar findings, with lower breast cancer risk associated with indicators of fruit and vegetable intake, such as vitamin C intake, and higher breast cancer risk associated with higher saturated fat intake, an indicator of meat, dairy, and processed food intake. And according to these studies, the more whole plant foods you eat, the better it is for your health. Every 20 grams of fiber intake per day was associated with a 15% lower risk of breast cancer. One problem with case control studies, though, is that they rely on people's memory of what they've been eating, potentially introducing what's known as recall bias. For example, if people with cancer are more likely to selectively remember more of the unhealthy things they ate, the skewed recall could artificially inflate the correlation between eating certain foods and cancer. Prospective cohort studies avoid this problem by following a group, a cohort of healthy women and their diets forward, prospectively, in time to see who gets cancer and who doesn't. A compilation of 10 such prospective cohort studies on breast cancer and fiber intake came up with similar results to the dozen case control studies mentioned before, a 14% lower risk of breast cancer for every 20 grams of fiber intake per day. The relationship between more fiber and less breast cancer may not be a straight line, though. Breast cancer risk may not significantly fall until at least 25 grams of fiber a day is reached. Unfortunately, the average American woman appears to eat less than 15 grams of fiber per day, only about half the minimum daily recommendation. Even the average vegetarian in the United States may only get about 20 grams daily. Healthier vegetarians, though, may average 37 grams a day, and vegans 46 grams daily. Meanwhile, the whole food plant-based diets used therapeutically to reverse chronic disease contain upwards of 60 grams of fiber. A side note, peeling back breast cancer. Does an apple a day keep the oncologist away? That was the title of a study published in the Annals of Oncology that set out to determine if eating an apple or more a day was associated with lower cancer risk. The results? Compared with people who averaged less than one apple a day, daily apple eaters had 24% lower odds of breast cancer, as well as significantly lower odds for ovarian cancer, laryngeal cancer, and colorectal cancer. The protective associations persisted even after considering these subjects' intake of vegetables and other fruits, suggesting daily apple consumption was more than just an indicator of eating a healthier diet in general. The cancer protection apples appear to offer is assumed to arrive from their antioxidant properties. Apple antioxidants are concentrated in the peel, which makes sense. The skin is the fruit's first line of defense against the outside world. Expose the inner flesh, and it starts to brown, oxidize, within minutes. The antioxidant power of the peel may be between 2 times in Golden Delicious to 6 times in Ida Red apples greater than the pulp. Beyond protecting against the initial free radical hit to your DNA, apple extract has been shown to suppress the growth of both estrogen receptor positive and negative breast cancer cells in a petri dish. When researchers at my alma mater, Cornell University, separately dripped extracts of peel and flesh from the same apples on cancer cells, the peel stopped cancer cell growth 10 times more effectively. Researchers found something in the peels of organic apples, presumably present in conventional ones as well, that appears to reactivate a tumor suppressor gene called MASPIN, an acronym for mammary serine protease inhibitor. MASPIN is one of the tools your body appears to use to keep breast cancer at bay. Breast cancer cells find a way to turn off this gene, but apple peels appear to be able to turn it back on. The researchers concluded that apple peels should not be discarded from the diet. Preventing breast cancer by any greens necessary. Earlier, I discussed the 2007 study of Long Island women that linked breast cancer risk to the heterocyclic amines formed in meat. older women consuming the most grilled, barbecued, or smoked meat over their lifetimes were found to have 47% increased odds of breast cancer. Those with high meat intake who also had low fruit and vegetable intake had 74% higher odds. Low fruit and vegetable intake may just be a sign of unhealthy habits overall, but increasing evidence suggests that there may be something in produce that is actively protective against breast cancer. For example, cruciferous vegetables like broccoli boost the activity of detoxifying enzymes in your liver. Research has shown if you feed people broccoli and Brussels sprouts, they clear caffeine more quickly, meaning if you eat a lot of cruciferous vegetables, you'd have to drink more coffee to get the same buzz because your liver, the body's purifier, has become so revved up. Might this process work for those cooked meat carcinogens as well? To find out, researchers fed a group of non-smokers pan-fried meat. They then measured the levels of heterocyclic amines circulating in their bodies by sampling their urine. For 2 weeks, the study subjects added about 3 cups of broccoli and Brussels sprouts to their daily diets and then ate the same meat meal. Though they consumed the same quantity of carcinogens, significantly less came out in their urine, consistent with the subjects' broccoli-boosted liver detox ability. What happened next was unexpected. The subjects stopped eating their veggies and, 2 weeks later, tried eating the meat meal again. Presumably, their ability to detox carcinogens would by then have reverted back to baseline. But instead, the subjects' liver function remained enhanced even weeks later. This finding suggests that not only might a heaping side of broccoli with your steak decrease carcinogen exposure, but also that eating your veggies days or even weeks before the big barbecue may help shore up your defenses. Choosing the veggie burger may be the safest choice, though, as it may have no heterocyclic amines to detoxify. So are women who eat a lot of green vegetables less likely to get breast cancer? A study of 50,000 African-American women, a sadly neglected demographic in medical research, but a population group who tends to regularly eat more greens, found that those who ate 2 or more servings of vegetables a day had a significantly decreased risk of a kind of breast cancer that's hard to treat, estrogen and progesterone receptor negative breast cancer. Broccoli appeared especially protective among premenopausal women, but collard green consumption was associated with less breast cancer risk at all ages. Breast cancer stem cells. What if you're already fighting breast cancer or in remission? Green vegetables may still be protective. Over the past decade, scientists have been developing a new theory of cancer biology based on the role of stem cells. Stem cells are essentially the body's raw materials, the parents from which all other cells with specialized functions are generated. As a result, stem cells are a critical component of the body's repair system, including regrowing skin, bone, and muscle. Breast tissue naturally has many stem cells in reserve, which are used during pregnancy to create new milk glands. However, as miraculous as stem cells are, their immortality can also work against us. Instead of rebuilding organs, if they turn cancerous, they can build tumors. Cancerous stem cells may be why breast cancer can return even up to 25 years after being fought off successfully the first time. When people are told that they're cancer-free, it may mean their tumors are gone, but if their stem cells are cancerous, the tumor still might reappear many years later. Sadly, someone who has been cancer-free for 10 years might consider herself cured, but actually may just be in remission. Smoldering cancerous stem cells may just be waiting to reignite. The current battery of sophisticated chemo drugs and radiation regimens is based on animal models. Success of a given treatment is often measured by its ability to shrink tumors in rodents, but rats in laboratories only live for about 2 or 3 years in any case. Doctors may be shrinking tumors, but mutated stem cells may still be lurking, able to slowly rebuild new tumors over the ensuing years. What we need to do is strike at the root of cancer. We need to devise treatments aimed not just at reducing tumor bulk, but at targeting what's been called the beating heart of the tumor, cancer stem cells. That's where broccoli may come in. Sulforaphane, a dietary component of cruciferous vegetables like broccoli, has been shown to suppress the ability of breast cancer stem cells to form tumors. This means that if you're currently in remission, eating a lot of broccoli could theoretically help keep your cancer from returning. I say theoretically just because these results are from a petri dish. To be useful as a cancer fighter, sulforaphane would have to first be absorbed into your bloodstream when you eat broccoli. Then it would have to build up to the same concentration in breast tissue found to counter cancer stem cells in the lab. Is that possible? An innovative group at Johns Hopkins University sought to find out. The researchers asked women scheduled for breast reduction surgeries to drink broccoli sprout juice an hour before their procedure. Sure enough, after dissecting the breast tissue post-surgery, the researchers found evidence of significant sulforaphane buildup. In other words, we now know that the cancer-fighting nutrients in broccoli do find their way to the right place when we swallow them. To reach the concentration of sulforaphane in the breast found to suppress breast cancer stem cells, however, you'd have to eat at least a quarter cup of broccoli sprouts a day. You can buy broccoli sprouts at the produce aisle, but they're cheap and easy to grow at home. They have a bit of a radishy bite to them, so I like to mix them into a salad to dilute their intensity. There have yet to be randomized clinical trials to see if breast cancer survivors who eat broccoli live longer than those who don't, but with no downside and only positive side effects, eating broccoli and other cruciferous vegetables is something I would recommend for everyone. Flax seeds. Flax seeds are one of the first items ever considered to be health foods, treasured for their purported healing properties since at least the times of ancient Greece, when the renowned physician Hippocrates wrote about using them to treat patients. Better known as one of the richest plant sources of essential omega-3 fatty acids, flax seeds are really set apart by their lignan content. The lignans are found throughout the plant kingdom. Flax seeds have around 100 times more lignans than other foods. What are lignans? Lignans are phytoestrogens that can dampen the effects of the body's own estrogen. This is why flax seeds are considered a first-line medical therapy for menstrual breast pain. In terms of breast cancer risk, eating about a daily tablespoon of ground flax seeds can extend a woman's menstrual cycle by about a day. This means she'll have fewer periods over the course of a lifetime, and therefore presumably less estrogen exposure and reduced breast cancer risk. Just as broccoli doesn't technically contain sulforaphane, only the precursors that turn into the compound when chewed, flax seeds don't contain lignans, only lignan precursors which need to be activated. This task is performed by the good bacteria in your gut. The gut bacteria's role may help explain why women with frequent urinary tract infections may be at higher risk of breast cancer. Every course of antibiotics you take can kill bacteria indiscriminately, meaning it may stymie the ability of the good bacteria in your gut to take full advantage of the lignans in your diet. Yet another reason you should take antibiotics only when necessary. Lignan intake is associated with significantly reduced breast cancer risk in postmenopausal women. This effect is presumed to be due to lignan's further estrogen-dampening effects, but since lignans are found in healthy foods like berries, whole grains, and dark leafy greens, could they just be an indicator of a healthier diet? In a petri dish, lignans do directly suppress the proliferation of breast cancer cells, but the strongest evidence to date that there's really something special about this class of phytonutrients comes from interventional trials, starting with a 2010 study funded by the National Cancer Institute. Researchers took about 45 women at high risk for breast cancer, meaning they had suspicious breast biopsies or had previously suffered from breast cancer, and gave them the equivalent of about 2 teaspoons of ground flax seeds every day. Needle biopsies of breast tissue were taken before and after the year-long study. The results? On average, the women had fewer precancerous changes in their breasts after the year of flax lignans than before they started. 80%, 36 of 45, had a drop in their levels of Ki-67, a biomarker, an indicator of increased cell proliferation. This finding suggests that sprinkling a few spoonfuls of ground flax seeds on your oatmeal or whatever you're eating throughout the day may reduce the risk of breast cancer. What about women who already have breast cancer? Breast cancer survivors who have higher levels of lignans in their bloodstreams and diets appear to live significantly longer. This outcome may be due to the fact that Women who eat flax seeds may also see a rise in the levels of endostatin in their breasts. Endostatin is a protein produced by your body to help starve tumors of their blood supply. The evidence from studies like these appeared so compelling that scientists performed a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled clinical trial of flax seeds for breast cancer patients, one of the few times a food has been ever so rigorously put to the test. Researchers located women with breast cancer scheduled for surgery and divided them randomly into two groups. Every day, group 1 ate a muffin containing flax seeds, while group 2 ate a muffin that looked and tasted the same but had no flaxseed in it. Biopsies of the tumors in the flax and no flax groups were taken at the beginning of the study and then compared with the pathology of the tumor removed during surgery about 5 weeks later. Was there any difference? Compared with the women who ate the placebo muffins, women consuming the muffins with flaxseed on average witnessed their tumor cell proliferation decrease, cancer cell death rates increase, and their CERB2 scores go down. That's a marker of cancer aggressiveness. The higher your score, the higher the potential for breast cancer to metastasize and spread throughout the body. In other words, the flaxseeds appeared to make the subject's cancer less aggressive. The researchers concluded, quote, "Dietary flaxseed has the potential to reduce tumor growth in patients with breast cancer. Flaxseed, which is inexpensive and readily available, may be a potential dietary alternative or adjunct to currently used breast cancer drugs." Unquote. Soy and breast cancer. Soybeans naturally contain another class of phytoestrogens called isoflavones. People hear the word estrogen and the word phytoestrogens and assume that means soy has estrogen-like effects. Not necessarily. Phytoestrogens dock into the same receptors as your own estrogen, but have a weaker effect, so they may actually block the effects of your more powerful animal estrogen. There are two types of estrogen receptors in the body, alpha and beta. Your own estrogen prefers alpha receptors, while plant estrogens, phytoestrogens, have an affinity for the beta receptors. The effects of soy phytoestrogens on different tissues, therefore, depends on the ratio of alpha to beta receptors. Estrogen has positive effects on some tissues and potentially negative effects on others. For example, high levels of estrogen can be good for the bones, but can increase the likelihood of developing breast cancer. Ideally, you'd like what's called a selective estrogen receptor modulator in your body, which would have pro-estrogenic effects in some tissues and anti-estrogenic effects in others. Well, that's what soy phytoestrogens appear to be. Soy seems to lower breast cancer risk and anti-estrogenic effect, but can also help reduce menopausal hot flash symptoms, a pro-estrogenic effect. So by eating soy, we may be able to enjoy the best of both worlds. What about soy for women with breast cancer? There have been 5 studies on breast cancer survivors and soy consumption. Overall, researchers have found that women diagnosed with breast cancer who ate the most soy lived significantly longer and had significantly lower risk of breast cancer recurrence than those who ate less soy. The quantity of phytoestrogens found in just a single cup of soy milk may reduce the risk of breast cancer returning by 25%. The improvement in survival for those eating more soy foods was found both in women whose tumors were responsive to estrogen, estrogen receptor positive breast cancer, and those whose tumors were not, estrogen receptor negative breast cancer. This also held true for both young women and older women. In one study, for example, 90% of the breast cancer patients who ate the most soy phytoestrogens after diagnosis were still alive 5 years later, whereas half of those who ate little or no soy were dead. One way soy may decrease cancer risk and improve survival is by helping to reactivate BRCA genes. BRCA1 and BRCA2 are so-called caretaker genes, cancer-suppressing genes responsible for DNA repair. Mutations in this gene can cause a rare form of hereditary breast cancer. As has been well publicized, Angelina Jolie decided to undergo a preventive double mastectomy. A National Breast Cancer Coalition survey found that the majority of women believe that most breast cancers occur among women with a family history or a genetic predisposition to the disease, but the reality is that as few as 2.5% of breast cancer cases are attributable to breast cancer running in the family. If the vast majority of breast cancer patients have fully functional BRCA genes, meaning that their DNA repair mechanisms are intact, How did their breast cancer form, grow, and spread? Breast tumors appear able to suppress the expression of the gene through a process called methylation. While the gene itself is operational, the cancer has effectively turned it off, or at least turned down its expression, potentially aiding the metastatic spread of the tumor. That's where soy may come in. The isoflavones in soy appear to help turn BRCA protection back on, removing the methyl straitjacket the tumor tried to place on it. The dose breast cancer researchers used to achieve this result in vitro was pretty hefty, though, the equivalent of eating about a cup of soybeans. Soy may also help women with variations of other breast cancer susceptibility genes known as MDM2 and CYP1B1. Women at increased genetic risk of breast cancer may therefore especially benefit from high soy intake. The bottom line is that no matter which genes you inherit, changes in your diet may be able to affect DNA expression at a genetic level, potentially boosting your ability to fight disease. A side note, why do women in Asia have less breast cancer? Though breast cancer is the most common cancer specific to women globally, Asian women are up to 5 times less likely to develop breast cancer than North American women. Why? One possibility is their intake of green tea, a common staple in many Asian diets. Green tea has been associated with about a 30% reduction in breast cancer risk. Another strong possibility is a relatively high intake of soy, which, if consumed consistently during childhood, may cut the risk of breast cancer later in life by half. If women consume soy primarily as an adult, though, their risk reduction may only be closer to 25%. While intake of green tea and soy may account for a twofold reduction in Asian women's breast cancer risk, it doesn't fully account for the disparity between Eastern and Western breast cancer rates. Asian populations also eat more mushrooms. As noted before when I was talking about red wine, white mushrooms have also been shown to block that estrogen synthase enzyme, at least in a petri dish. So researchers decided to investigate if there was a link between mushroom intake and breast cancer. They compared the mushroom consumption of 1,000 breast cancer patients to 1,000 healthy subjects of similar age, weight, and smoking and exercise status. The women whose mushroom consumption averaged just about one half of a mushroom or more per day had 64% lower odds of breast cancer compared with women who didn't eat mushrooms at all. Eating mushrooms and sipping at least a half a tea bag's worth of green tea each day was associated with nearly 90% lower breast cancer odds. Oncologists, doctors who treat cancer, can take pride in the strides they've made. Thanks to improvement in cancer treatment, cancer patients are living longer and healthier, as has been celebrated in oncology journal editorials with titles like "Cancer Survivors, 10 Million Strong and Growing." Yes, more than 10 million cancer patients are still alive today, with perhaps as many as 1 million new individuals in the United States joining those ranks each year. That's an accomplishment, but wouldn't it be even better to prevent those 1 million cases in the first place? In medicine, a cancer diagnosis is considered a teachable moment when we can motivate a patient to improve his or her lifestyle. By then, though, it may already be too late.